Hi, I'm Samuel, and this is Duty. Have you signed up for the launch of There's an Alien in My Toilet on Kickstarter? I hope that you do. It's gonna be a hilarious ride. The link is in the summary. See you there.
What's up, y'all? This is Sam, the Crazy Man Vera, and I am coming to you solo tonight. And George was, unfortunately, George was at a basketball game this weekend, and he was screaming like a young cheerleader in the audience, and he lost his voice. So with that said, we're riding Dolo, and we have a very special guest on tonight. His name is Mike Jimmy. He's all the way from the Netherlands. It's like 2 a.m. for him. He's staying up all night. So before we bring him in, let's get to that intro. Let's get it.
Only show for independents all around, giving you a platform to spread your word all over town. Cast the Craze is the place to promote to your fans with the dream of Medina and Sam the Crazy Man. Subscribe to our show and never miss an episode. It's time to get your meds, listen to us on the go. Updated every week, we never miss a day. Join the squad, come on in, it's time to cast the Craze. If you are an independent,
cast the Craze!
Making moves on your own,
cast the Craze!
On your grind in the streets,
cast the Craze!
Join the movement,
cast the Craze!
Yeah, George, we did it again. Come on now. Yeah, you want to do it. Catch the Craze. Welcome to Catch the Craze Podcast. I'm your host with the most, Sam, the Crazy Man, Vera. And I am with nobody. So anyway, tonight we're going to be bringing on a very special guest. He's going to be talking about The Life on Kara, and it is on Indiegogo. This is for issue number 5. He's got 26 days to go. He's at 24 backers. He is, let's see, he made his goal. He's 160% funded, but he's got 26 days to go. Can we get him to like, what, 500% funded? I know we can do it, right? He's only for the Netherlands. It's 2 a.m. This guy is working. He is hustling, right? There is no time to sleep, right? Only the weak sleep, right? The people who succeed, the entrepreneurs, the kingpins, they work 23 hours and sleep 1 hour. All right, 1 hour. That's all you get. 1 hour. So yes, we're gonna be talking about The Life on Kara, and we're not even gonna wait. We're going to bring them right in. So let's get this party started. What's up?
Well, lovelies.
What's going on?
I thought we were slated for 2:30, like local time. No, I started, you know, sharing the word around, like, hey, guys, I'm going to be live. And suddenly I like, 2 a.m. Oh, damn. I only got like 30 minutes to wake the fuck up. So long live coffee. Oh, my God.
Well, we normally, when we have a campaign guest, we bring you 15 minutes after the hour. When we have a normal guest, it's usually 30 minutes after the hour. So, you know, we want to, you know, try to give you as much exposure as possible. And I know that you're burning both ends of the candle. So pretty admirable. But let's introduce who you are. Let's tell everybody who you are. So who are we talking to tonight?
So I'm Mike Jimmy de Bruin from the Netherlands. I started the company Fairies and Ends 4 years ago. And we've been publishing books since then. You know, we started with Life on Kara. We've done 13 books in total so far. I started making comics in 2017. So pretty quickly after that, we went full on with publications. And we never looked back. And it's amazing.
Wow. 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 So now let's go further back. We really want to go further back before we go forward. So what was like growing up as a child?
It was okay. not the greatest childhood, but you know, art is always a bit of escapism. So you use it and you draw a lot. And after a while you do it so much that you can't get rid of it. You know, I've always been an avid comic reader. Like, my dad had a huge collection of Franco-Belgian comics, which I like to create myself as well.
Right.
which means that his entire collection was in my bedroom because that's where they would end up. I had to read something before bed, right?
Right, there you go.
And yeah, like 5 years ago, like I had a pretty shitty job. I worked in construction. 5 years ago, I would just went, you know what? I feel terrible. I hate this job. Like everything sucks. We're going to go full masochist on this. We're going to make a comic. And I never look back, and it's been the best decision of my life.
I hear you, brother. I hear you. Same thing here. You know, my company went, the company I worked for went bankrupt. And so we, you know, met my wife and my family, and they're like, go for it. So, you know, we're in the trenches together, brother.
Oh, yeah. The grind is real.
Yes, exactly. So what was your first introduction to the arts or comics? At what age do you remember picking up that first item of inspiration for you?
I must have been 5 or 6, and we had this very long-running series of Suske and Wiske, which is a very much Dutch and Belgian comic. They never broke into the international scene. Well, they did get published there. Like, there are several translations. So Bob and Bobette would be the English or French translation. But Asterix, Lucky Luke, all kinds of series that most Americans have no idea exist, but are totally worth looking into, because essentially every single issue is its own story and is just, it's its own graphic novel. You know, you get an entire series of standalone graphic novels with the same characters, and it has such a gigantic library that it definitely rivals the American scene.
So almost, sure, like Tolkien, almost like Tolkien, what he did with Lord of the Rings, with you're saying,
yeah.
Okay. All right, I just want to say, Creators Outlet, what's up? Welcome to the show. Not sure if you hear that. yeah, he says, hail Mike and Sam. I mean, Mike, Jimmy, and Sam.
Still, dude.
Yes. And so I noticed in your bio that you were fascinated by creatures and fantasy. What is it about that genre that really appeals to you?
The fact that you always explore something new, you really see the creators, you know, whether it's a novel or a comic, it's always, you know, very unique in its visuals. You always see a certain style of the creator really coming out in those kinds of things.
Right.
And yeah, there's always a little bit of uniqueness in there. It doesn't matter how cliche the story is, you know, there's always a little bit of the creator itself in there, no matter how small or big the story they actually make.
Right. Right. So what is the most, we also have Fizz Chozo in the house. He says, I just love the variety of different monster designs and abilities. Oh, so yeah. So what is, all right. So like I love fantasy as well. Right. But there's specific things that really stand out to me. So any specific creature or substance that sticks out to you from that genre?
Yeah. Tolkien, obviously, but lately I've been reading Terry Goodguine's A Wizard's First Rule, which I had to let go because there's some themes in there where I'm going, nope, not for me. but also a very good one is the steampunk series, The Demimonde, which combines science fiction and steampunk in a very unique way that I never saw before, and is really, really well written. The Discworld series, obviously, by Terry Pratchett, because a spoof on fantasy that is actually serious enough to right, make keep itself a spoof. I love it.
Nice. Yes. Miss Raina 1000 says, hello. Welcome. So, all right. So you picked up fantasy. It sparked your imagination. At what point did you realize, hey, I want to create something myself?
That would be early 2016. Like, I've always been dabbling with either thinking of starting a comic or like making a fantasy game or something. You know, I dabbled in game design and game creation as well. And that's a bot.
Is it?
Yeah, those are Russian bots that are invading, so just ignore them.
All right.
But in 2016, I started writing my own story. That was Sage of Sunset. And about 20,000 words in, I realized, you know what? This is a comic script, and I'm just writing this for myself, and I suck at writing. Like, you got to start switching this over.
Right.
And then, yeah, in 2017, you know, I had a very, very bad breakup. And I felt so horrible that I decided, let's start, jump into comics. We need something to get our minds off of things. And yeah, I got into 110 pages with that one. Like, it was starting to get a really big graphic novel, or web novel, web comic, actually. And then Love on Chorus started taking precedence. And I was like, okay, this is going to go on hiatus. I'm not ready for the magnum opus yet. But it's still in the back of my mind. It's starting to itch again. So I'm thinking of restarting it this year or the next one.
Nice. So why did you decide your first project to be such a major undertaking?
Because I was a fool who didn't know anything.
That's awesome. That's awesome. So, you know, going and taking on your first project, there's a lot of learnings, right? Learning curves, and so yeah. What were some of the learning curves for you, and what were some of your takeaways from that experience?
Well, the biggest one was defining my style. Like, I did already have a very Franco-Belgian classic style, but finding what I like to work with, how I like my page layouts, learning how to letter properly, how to space everything. I pretty much used it as my making comics 101. And at around 110 pages in, like, the difference between page 1 and page 100 was so incredible that there was no comparison anymore. And that's also why I decided to go on hiatus. Like, this deserves to have its own quality that I'm putting into Love and Cora already,
right?
That deserves to be its own entire thing and to be published traditionally, because, like, that's something that would work a lot better for, I think, for the story.
Right.
So I'm going to publish it in proper graphic novels like I'm used to, you know, each part being like 60 pages.
Right. So where did you pull your, how did you educate yourself throughout that process? You know, as you were going along and you were figuring out page layout and pacing, you know, did you refer to any books? Did you refer to anybody in the industry, peers? How did you navigate the space?
I watched a lot of Mark Crilly on YouTube back in the day, because he really, you know, both as working for other people and making his own stories, you know, he knows his stuff.
Right.
And a lot of podcasts like these. And I didn't realize how big the comic scene on YouTube is with comic creation. And then since I started doing it myself, and it's incredible. I've made so many friends through it.
Yeah.
But like, just teaching myself, learning things, like, how do you even make a book? How do you even publish a PDF, you know, send it to the printer and everything?
Right.
It's been a hard learning curve, but it's also something that, you know, I'm still learning. I'm still educating myself. How can I do this better?
Right.
How do I make it more fun and easier for people to work with me and otherwise? And it's still learning. You know, you never stop learning once you're doing this, and that is definitely one of the most fun parts of it.
Right. So what was the biggest lesson you took away that you apply today in your craft?
The most I learned was lettering. You know, I had no idea how much of a craft that is on its own. I was like, you put the text bubbles in, it's fine. It's like, no, it's not. There is such a big craft in there.
Right. So lettering, it is complicated. I don't letter my own. You know, I have the fortunate pleasure of having George Medina letter my books. You know, because I suck at it. And so, but you had to do all of it.
Yeah.
Right. So now, because of what you've learned from your first project, how does Life on Kara benefit from that skill set that you've taken from there?
My original project taught me to just create and create constantly, create the discipline to, you know, keep going, whether I liked it or not, or felt very tired, you know, from my job working in construction, you know, it was very physically intense. Just get going at least 30 minutes a day. And if you can't hit 30, then we're just going to do 15, which means that I ended up, you know, getting home at 5:30 in the evening and working until 11 and waking up at 4:30 in the morning again. Work.
Right. Right.
But it doesn't matter. You know, you did the thing, you did, you kept it going. And with Love and Cora, my writer and I, the original writer, had this idea and I went ham on it. And in 3 months, we had the first issue done, which is insane. And I probably should have spent a little more time on it. But you know what? We did it. And there is a cat trying to walk onto my keyboard. Shelby, damn it. There we go.
What's your cat's name?
Shelby.
Chubby. What's up, Chubby? All right. So I'm a cat lover myself. I have a bunch of them. So let's talk about the inspiration for Life on Kara. Where'd it come from?
I've always wanted to make a true fantasy, you know, no humanoids, you know, completely foreign planet, really explore that part of it. And I wanted to make it character focused, like the stories that I grew up with.
Right.
So you had your universe, but all kinds of things happen. It's only a day in the life of. And that is something that I really pride myself in for being able to continue, you know, throughout the entire series so far. And it really worked out. But yeah, it essentially just started with me saying, I want to make a true fantasy to my original writer.
Right.
And she went, okay, so how would that work? So I figured out the world. We started talking, okay, what kind of creatures would live there? You know, what are the rules of the world? Like, there's no red or yellow. There's continents orbiting a gigantic sun-like sci-fi structure. There's no magic and all that. And yeah, from there, it's just been thinking up stories. Like, so what would these creatures tell us their legends? What would their lives look like, you know, being this and this size, living in this and this environment?
Right.
And it's amazing to be able to work with such an open format.
Right. I mean, you're the first guest that we've had on the show that basically identify the color palette, right? And you eliminated two specific colors. Why did you go with that approach? And what was the motivation behind it?
I want Love and Kara to be very realistic. It looks cartoony, but there is a lot of world building going on in the background. Like a lot. Like I wrote entire essays on the world, you know, as a world builder. Love that stuff. And the reason that it doesn't have red or yellow is because the core that all the continents orbit around doesn't give off those hues of light. It's a blue ball that gives off blue light. So right. You're only going to get your greens, your purples, your blues, and your grays. You know, everything that would be red or yellow or anything in between right. would essentially just be black or gray.
Wow. Nice. So you've identified the setting. How did you, which was the first character you've come up with and you created, and then how did you build around that?
So the first character that we had was Atsi, who is a flying creature that just lived, in high up in the trees, in small colony-like tribes, like 20 to 30 individuals. And we just needed a motivation. And I was like, okay, so what if she just gets attacked, going out for food? And my writer was like, that works. And so she gets attacked. She breaks her arm in the attack. So she falls all the way down to the ground and happens to fall into some distant cousins called the Tusker, who are a little bigger, bulkier. And they started using the ancient technology that is still littered all over the world
right.
To their benefit. And they started learning how to use it. But they also see it as a magical thing because they have legends worked around, things that we would consider, just technology.
Right.
Like we grab our phone now, and in the 1950s, this little device in our hands would be literally magic. And
scary. So
they learned how to use it. They learned how to read the ancient writings by those ancient creatures that actually built the core. And we just learn a little bit about the world a little bit at a time.
Right.
And that is essentially the first two issues that kind of flow into one another. They're still, you can still read them on their own, but they work together really well. And then from the third issue, my original writer left, and I've been honored to have Martin Fisher and Kimberly Kovac on board, who have both been just going completely ham with the concept. And we got scripts up to issue 12 right now.
Congratulations.
So, yeah, they are absolutely insane. And I'm like, oh my God, my writers are enthusiastic. And oh my God, my writers are enthusiastic, and I have to draw all that.
Yeah, don't you love it?
Oh man, it's insane.
So how did you find them? How did you come across them?
So my original writer left, and I was like, okay, you haven't been, like I had been pulling on her, like, okay, I really, like, Life on Coral works.
Right.
It's been proven to work. Convention people love it. People have been asking for issue two. And then, of course, 2020 happened. But I was like, I don't want to let go of this concept.
Right.
And so I started looking for writers, which is the worst thing in the world, because you're going to get 30 people that have made a very successful poem on DeviantArt in 2005 and think they can make a comic strip out of nowhere. And two wonderful people that have actually proven themselves to be amazing comic writers.
Right.
So I hired them both. Best decision of my life.
Right. Yeah, that's funny. So walk me through the process. So what's the communication like? You provide them with the basically the roadmap, right? The plot for the entire world.
Yeah.
And then you give it to, now you have two writers. So how does that collaboration actually work in real time?
So they each just send me an idea for a story whenever they have one, pretty much an elevator pitch, but right. with the extra added, like, okay, these are the characters, this is the entire story, like 300, 500 words. You got to change this a bit. This might not work. Do you think this would work out as a 32-page story? If so, yes. What are you going to elaborate on? What's going to be the focus? And once that is greenlit, you know, back and forth for a couple of weeks, they just start writing the script. And I edit that, you know, to back and forth for like 3-4 times as well. And then storyboarding, me just grinding away at the pages. From there, it's just, you know, working through it and off to the next one.
Right. So any surprises, were you like pleasantly surprised with a twist on the direction with the story that you envisioned? Were there any nuances that they were able to add to it? Were you like, huh, I really didn't think of that?
Plenty. Well, the thing is, like, I have complete aphantasia. Like, I suck at thinking of stories. I suck at describing things, like getting things from my head onto paper. Right. So I really need a written description for myself to work properly.
Right.
And with Love and Korra, like, there's the rules of the world, but otherwise it's there. Like, it's just my sandbox, but they can play in it whatever way they want, as long as they keep to the rules.
Right.
And like, there is no big roadmap. Like, by the end of it, like, this and this has to have happened. Like, there's no big cataclysm waiting unless they write it.
Right.
But essentially, like, it's just an open world, you know, that you explore.
Right.
And we explore it as we go as well. And the readers enjoy that kind of format because they never know what's coming. But neither, like, I love it too, because neither do I.
Nice. All right. So now I noticed that the first three issues, the last issue that you did on Kickstarter was number 3, and then you moved over to Indiegogo. Can you explain why you switched over?
It flopped horribly on Kickstarter. And the first two issues, I paid out of my own pocket. And then I tried for Kickstarter with the, you know, having hired a new colorist, like, instead of fumbling with it myself because it's second coloring.
I do too. Don't feel bad.
Yeah, no, I don't at all. I'm very specified in inking.
Right.
And so that flopped. You know, we made only 700 euros out of a 2,000 euro goal. And I was like, okay, you know what? The colorist has been paid. I know how much printing will be. I have awesome variant covers. Let's just move to Indiegogo. We're going to put the minimum goal that they require, and we are just going to publish it just like always. And that worked. We made like 1,200 euros, and that worked. And so, yeah, we published. People really liked it. And we just did it again for Love and Korra 4.
Right.
Some comics just work better on Indiegogo than they do on Kickstarter, and the other way around. So,
right, you know. And they're both complicated, you know, because Indiegogo has a loyal following. There's like the Hatfields and the McCoys. It's like two factions, yeah. Right? Right. So, and it's like East versus West. So, what did you learn from your initial failure, and what did you apply to your future successes with the launches on Indiegogo? Anything different?
I decided to just keep to Indiegogo because it works there. I also learned that live shows really make a difference. So I'm really glad that I started doing this many live shows. It was incredibly nerve-wracking in the beginning because I really don't like being in front of a camera.
Right.
But you know what? We went for it. I'm glad that I started doing it. And, you know, it's starting to get better. I'm not as scared of the camera anymore.
You seem like a natural to me. You're doing really well. So, but now, you know, I'm on your Kickstarter page right now. It's on the screen. And so walk me through Life on Korra number 5. So for someone who's never picked up Life on Korra, who doesn't know what it is, what's the elevator pitch?
Love on Korra is a series of standalone fantasy comics that follow a new kind of creature on an alien world every single issue. Every story can be read both separately or as one big narrative. And in that way, it's very easy to jump into. It is for all ages, but it doesn't mean it's dumbed down. So grown-ups love it. Kids love it. You can read it both with your kids. And it really makes it a very pleasant experience. And it's something that a lot of people are really looking to get more of in the world. So people, follow my example. We want this stuff.
Nice, nice. So let's walk us through the packages. We're on your page right now. What can people get from pledging to the campaign?
We went a little bit overboard, and we went for 8 variant covers, two by myself, and 6 by 6 very, very talented artists. You can get yourself this awesome Utzi plushie, who is turning into the mascot for the entire show. And yeah, we went overboard, but it's also the 5th issue. And how many independent creators can say that they have been making they have gone to 5 issues in a series?
Yes, it's a huge milestone, and you need to, congratulations to that. I also want to say a welcome to Nefarious. He says, what's good, crazy? Yo, Mike, Jimmy, how goes? So welcome to the show. You hit the nail on the head. The reason why a lot of independents get a bad rap is because, like one trick pony. You start something. Yeah. In fact, I was looking at I do a lot of research, and I was looking at a really successful Kickstarter campaign, and it was a one and done.
Yeah.
Raised $20,000 and then disappeared, and never there was no follow-ups from that point on. And so, and that's the curse of the independent. And so the fact that you've already gotten to issue 5 and you have 12 issues already written, that's a huge, huge accomplishment. So you need to tip your hat off to that.
I couldn't do it without my team, but when you trust in something and it's been proven, like it's been proving itself over and over again, it's not that I'm just throwing something at a wall and hope it sticks.
Right.
It's not an overnight success in the mate. And like, it's never an overnight success. I know that, I went into comics knowing, we're not going to be like the big, new name by the time next year. No, this is like a 5 to 10 year plan that I accept, that I am willing to grind through. We have put in the money and the time to keep working on this. Like something I'm proud of, because every single time we kept our promises, we keep going, and the reports from it, like the reviews and everything, have always been positive. So, it's a proven concept by now.
Yes. And that's huge. And I think the fact that you even planned it out that many years out, that shows, number one, there is a commitment level that you've already assessed internally. You've created your roadmap, which is fantastic. You understand that you need to, that it is the tortoise and the hare, right? So it's a turtle race, right? And so in order for you to get to the destination, it's, slow and steady. But to answer you, Nefarious, I don't know. I just know I couldn't find him anywhere. It was just gone. That book, wow. I just saw it was a huge success, and it just disappeared. So it was supposed to be a series. I do know that, but it just vanished. So there could be a lot of reasons, but there's a lot of things that plague the independent community. And, Kickstarter provides a platform for you to do things that we normally couldn't do years ago, especially in the realm of the big two. And then with Marvel and DC leaving Diamond, that also opened up doors for independents as well. Right. So, so you said that you went 8 variant covers.
That's right.
All right. So what happened? Did you hit your head one day? How did the idea you fell down the stairs? How did that happen?
Okay. So a lot of people were like, hey, I would love to do a variant at some point too. you know, and like I made a lot of friends over the last 2 years in comics and in just, you know, the artistic scenes in general that I'm in. And I was like, you know what, it's issue 5. So I started asking around, like, hey, how much would it cost me for you to make a variant, stuff like that. And most of them went for you. Oh, man, it's free. I just want to make my variant for you. And I was like, OK, we can do that. Thank you.
Right. Nice. So what can people get from your campaign, from supporting this campaign?
So you can get the Explorer package, which is all variants plus the Atsy plushie. These are going nice. To be. Yeah. So these are going to be manufactured from China. This is a prototype, and there's one thing that is going to change from this one to the final result, and that is the wings. Right. So they are glued together right now.
Okay.
But if you look at the ears, you can post them because they're wired, and I'm going to do the same for the wings.
Nice.
So it's going to be pretty much entirely posable.
All right. So I'm going to stop you right there for a second. All right. So we already established you hit your head for the 8 variant the covers. So did you? So now you're going all in. You're putting all your chips on the table, right?
Oh, yeah.
You're putting it all on black. Where did the idea come to do the plushies?
I love them. Simple as that. I wanted my own plushie from my own franchise. And I am like, why wouldn't I? You just got to go at it. You know, go big or go home.
That's what I'm saying, man. That's what I'm saying, man, after my own heart. Fantastic. And so now it's always complicated, right? When you have an entire universe that you've built from your imagination, how did you land on that specific character from all the characters in your library?
She made such a difference in my life. You know, it's not... if it wasn't for that first story, like the second issue wouldn't exist. But I wouldn't have the fans that I have right now, you know, returning fans, people in the Netherlands who saw me at conventions. And now if they see the banner behind me at cons, they go, oh, Love of Korra, we already got that one. And I can say, yeah, well, we have 4 issues already, you know,
there you go.
At this point.
Yes.
And yeah, like they love the character. Like people really love this character. She is very recognizable, very unique. Even though it kind of looks, you know, like a classic dragon. You're just a little feathery.
Right.
But yeah, people really love it. The design is cute. And it just works. You know, she's turning into a mascot in a good way.
Fantastic. Okay, so now you got the Explorer package and you get all the covers and you get a plushie, which is fantastic. And I love the fact that you're micro, you're hands-on with the product development stage, and you know exactly what you're looking for. Fantastic. And because sometimes independent, you know, I'm just happy to have a plush. I don't care if it doesn't work, you know, but, you know, it's details that's important. Right? So now... So you get that, you get the plushies. What else, you know, so what are some other packages that do you have like catch-up campaigns?
So you can get, of course, the physical copy of Love of Korra 5. All covers are the same price. So, you know, you can just pick and choose whatever you want. You can get the digital catch-up and, of course, normal digital tier. There's the digital tier. There's the catch-up tier with whatever variant you want as well.
Right.
You can get the plushie separately if you're like, hey, I just love this little thing. Let me have this. You know, I don't care about the comic. Whatever. I'm cool with that. You know, give something to your kids. I love them. You know, you can get the not just one copy of the comic with the plushie. You can go all kinds of ways. There's retailer tiers, of course. And you can also get original art pages if you're into that. So all pages are 100 euros. And you can get some original covers by myself as well.
Nice. So you illustrate everything traditionally?
Yes.
Okay. So and now, do you color it, or you have a separate colorist?
No, my coloring sucks. I've colored issues 1 and 2 myself, and that's pretty much flat coloring.
Right.
But for issue 3 and onward, I was like, okay, I'm keeping myself back with this. I need to find someone who really pushes my inking to a next level rather than keeping myself back. And on this amazing art colorist that we had worked with before within Verisin Ends, and made a short story for us.
Right.
We didn't publish that physically, but, you know, she's proven to really know what she's doing. And she just made a test page for Lava Cora 3. And I was like, okay, you're hired. Like, screw the rest. Like, you are what I look for. And yeah, we've been working together ever since. She is a blast to work with. She is consistent. She keeps working at it. And she just loves, like, seeing my pages come to her.
Right.
But because I don't give her any art direction either, like, whatever page I get back from her is what she had in mind. And every single time, she just blows my head off with the amount, like, with the beauty of every single panel and the work that she's doing here.
Now, is she a digital colorist?
Yes.
Because it has this wash watercolor-esque look to it.
I know. Like, it's so interesting to see how she does it. I have no idea how she does it. It's magic to me. But I love it.
Fantastic job. It's very the colors are all complementary. And until you told me that you omitted whether red and yellow, I would never have picked up on it until now that I'm looking at it. Which is fantastic. It's amazing because you don't realize those little nuances unless someone actually tells you, because you're too busy enjoying the story and the universe that you've created, right?
Exactly.
Right. Fantastic. Fantastic. So how did you find her?
She was active on Tapas already, where, you know, I originally started posting my original webcomic, Sage of Sunset. That's where I met my first writer for Lava Cora that's where I met her too. And she had done a short story for my writer, you know, as a separate thing, and they published that. And I put the coloring ad on Tapas to be like, hey, this is a job opening. This is a paid thing. You know, we've already proven ourselves as a creator. So you will get constant work and, you know, we'll keep at it. And she replied. And yeah, the rest is history. Like, she just makes beautiful work that fits the story.
Fantastic. Fantastic. Yeah, I'm looking at all your variant covers. All somehow complement your universe. Because sometimes you see variant covers and some of them just don't really convey what's in the story, but your palettes, the colors, the covers all seem to bring out the essence of your story, which I think is you nailed it.
And that's the fun thing too. Like, all variants are completely by the creators themselves. Like, I only sent them, you know, the story that I had done so far. There's a couple of more pages that need to be colored, but, you know, right, done inking and everything. So they could read the whole thing. And I just went, you know what? Enjoy yourself. And they did, apparently, because every single one of them blew me away.
Nice. Fantastic. Fantastic. No, this is beautiful, and so you launched this what, 4 days ago?
Last Friday. So
nice, we're doing pretty good. Yes, yeah, I mean, fantastic. Fantastic. I think you have something. You know what I like about what I see with your story, that it's And you said it also. You said it's all ages, but it's not dumbed down so that adults can enjoy it.
Exactly. Right?
And that's the missing component. I think what happens when people say all ages, they steer away from it and like, oh, but you know, I'm going to go over here and get some action adventure. But that you added that little bonus that catch the attention of the person walking by. Wait, oh, you mean I can enjoy it too?
Oh, yeah.
So what made you really add that last piece to that your slogan?
Because that is something that, like, exactly, like people see all ages and they're like, oh, I don't have kids, so it's not for, you know, it's not for me.
Right.
Well, all ages really means all ages. And that's the same for a lot of all ages books.
Right.
But it just has this stigma of, oh, so it's for, you know, next, if you're not a parent with kids, you know, it's not for you. And like, no, like this, there is death in this series. There are injuries, but it's not graphic. It's not bad in a way that, you know, you're going to see blood and gore or whatever all over it. No, like it's reality.
Right.
Reality brought in a way that is both child friendly but still fun to read for adults.
Right. Nice. Who's your favorite character?
I like all main characters so far. Like Atsi, Grund, Octaz, Calais from the fourth issue, and now Oxtan and Toifan. Like all of them have their own motivations. They all have their little lesson to learn. They all have their big adventure. And yeah, they're all very unique so far.
Right.
That they're currently like, they're all over the place, you know, with the style changes, of course, you know, like we grow as artists while doing these, but they all have the same kind of feeling to the story. And every single character is really their own thing.
Right.
But you really feel like this is all life on Korra.
Nice. Nice. Fantastic. Fantastic. So now someone who is just coming across this and they say, you know, I find this fascinating. How can they find out more about you? Where can they find you?
So the first three issues are free to read on Tapas right now. So tapas.io, look for Live from Korra, and you will be able to read all three issues for free. You can always find me on Twitter at @an_ends, where I will often post work in progress pictures, you know, of me penciling and inking,
nice.
As well as just promoting Live from Korra 5. I'm already well into Live from Korra 6. Like, I actually had to go even bigger on my pages because Kimberly Kovac, who's written 4 and now 6, decided that eight panels per page is a lot, is fun. Yeah, some panels take about the same time as an entire page for a previous issue.
Beautiful.
So we're having fun.
Nice.
I keep going. I keep running. The grind is always real. And you can find me on YouTube as Mike Jimmy Losha de Bruin, where I often just do hangout streams. You know, I start inking or I have to ink a certain page. You know, I'm going to be there for a couple of hours. And I'm like, here's a StreamYard link. Enjoy, you know, come hang out, have a chat. Tell us about your project. And, of course, Facebook as Fairies and Ends, or same name, Mike Jimmy Losha de Bruin. But most people can actually spell that, so that's fine.
Right. Yeah, so the link, we are talking to Mike Jimmy, and the link for Life on Korra is in the chat, and it's also in the summary in the YouTube notes, and on Facebook and on Twitch, wherever you're watching us. So please hit that link, head over to Indiegogo, Life on Korra. Right now, he is currently 160% 100% funded with 26 days to go. And I'm sure that 160 can turn into 500% funded, right? So let's make it happen. This guy is work burning the midnight owl. He's there till two thirty in the morning, 3 o'clock in the morning, almost over there.
Nearly three. Yeah.
The guy's puffing the cigarettes, drinking his coffee. He's trying to stay awake. He needs the caffeine. So it's been a pleasure having you on the show, brother. I'm glad to see that someone's doing something for all ages, because there is a lot of sex and violence on out there right now. And people just need to just imagine, explore, and get away and escape and just have fun. And you're doing exactly that. It was a pleasure having you on. You're always welcome back. You know, we'd love to get you back on the show and deep dive just more about you and your creative team. You can bring your team on, whatever the case is. So thank you, Jimmy. Any final words that you want to share with the audience?
Buy indie comics and stay and especially ours. By the lovely words by Daphne Lage.
There you go. Thank you, buddy. Thank you for joining us. And we'll talk to you soon.
Stay awesome.
You got it, buddy. All right. So that was Jimmy and Life on Kara. Check it out, man. I am a big proponent and a big fan of all ages comics. If you guys know that, with Catch the Crazies and There's Nailing in My Toilet. Again, the landing page for that is also in the summary. And so anybody who is doing that, I'm a big fan of, right? And that's not enough of. You know, I grew up with the 80s cartoons. I grew up with, the Smurfs and Pawpaw Bears and, you know, the Littles and all that stuff. And, you know, we just don't have enough of that just to get the kids curious and get the imagination flowing. There's just too much violence and we have to show them something else. Life on Kara does exactly that. Go check it out. You know, everybody who's been in the chat tonight, thank you so much for joining us. Was it Fizz Chozo? And Creators Outlet and Miss Raina 1000. And who else am I missing? And Nefarious. Thank you all for joining us and supporting our brother here tonight. Don't forget. And if you can't pledge, share it with your friends and family. Spread the word. Help spread the word. That's the best thing you can do. With that said, everybody, I am Sam the Crazy Man Vera. And this was another episode of Catch the Craze. And we are out.
It's just easy. It does not.
Crazy.
No, I was talking about my friend Acquies.
Say my name.
Right?
This is what you were thinking?
Crazy.
Oh,
my God.
Are you describing? He said, I'm the...
You're listening to Catch the Craze. You're listening to Catch the Craze. You're listening to Catch the Craze.
You are listening to Catch the Craze.
I'm Kiss the Craze.
You're listening to Catch the Craze.
Candy girl.